Hello and welcome to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm David Rosenfeld, independent journalist and associate editor of thelundreport.org, which focuses on investigative healthcare policy news. Joining me today is Dr. Don Thiemann, a former medical director for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Thiemann served as a physician for more than 16 years before working for Regents. He now works as a medical director for Care Oregon, the state's largest administrator of the Oregon Health Plan. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Thiemann.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
In a recent commentary posted at thelundreport.org, Dr. Thiemann, you write that you've been inside our health industry and have seen what happens when big money is involved and public policy is crucial to future profits. You go on to write, "I can honestly tell you that resources spent on influencing the public are enormous and the information is inevitably biased to the interests of its source." Can you explain to us further what you meant by that?
I'm referring to the fear-mongering by some parts of our industry, including the industry's trade association, America's Health Insurance Plans, which now goes by a different name than it did back in the days of Clinton reform. And I'm referring to the effort to make people afraid of any sort of government-administered health care and the quoted material from their own internal strategy document at America's Health Insurance Plans about the need to emphasize horror stories about government-run health care. In other words, cherry-pick bad things that have happened to people that could be blamed somehow on government-run health care and then use those to make people afraid of government-run care, as though you couldn't find just as many cherry-picked horror stories about private health care.
And you're talking about there the issue of the public option, public health plan option administered by the government, whether that's going to be in the plan.
That's right. And specifically, the information that came right out of a document from America's Health Insurance Plans years ago about the attempt to deliberately generate fear among the public about any sort of government-run insurance option.
And even today, when we know that the bill's pending before Congress, the public option would only include about 6 million Americans, that most people would not have the option of buying into this so-called option. How does that put the fear in light of what the industry is trying to say?
Well, certainly there's not much to fear if so few people are going to have access to a public option. And I would say that those people don't have anything to fear either. Someone was quoted in the press not long ago saying that they'd rather have their medical care run by a government bureaucrat than by an insurance industry bureaucrat. And, I am an insurance industry bureaucrat and one who tries to do it right. But when I look at the big picture, I agree with the person who said that. I think the people who are in healthcare in our government, by and large, have our interest in heart much more than people in the insurance industry, by and large.
When you say you are an insurance executive bureaucrat, that you were really at front row seat in terms of what is denied in terms of coverage or what is approved for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon, the largest commercial insurer in the state. Can you give our listeners an insight into that process and how those decisions are made?
Yes. The medical decisions about what is covered and what is not, particularly in a company like Regents, are actually quite rigorous, and there's a lot of effort to put them, to make them based on science and on the best information we have about what works in healthcare and what does not. Although I know that function is not always done well by all companies, my own experience is that that's not where the biggest problems are. The biggest problems that lead to people not getting care that they need have to do with people either not having insurance at all or having insurance with such high deductibles and other out-of-pocket expenses that they can't afford to get care, even though their insurance might pick up the excess over some large deductible, if they can't afford the deductible, in some ways it doesn't matter. They might as well not have insurance.
I want to stop you right there and get to that later. But before that, you mentioned that you felt that denying care for those with insurance is not as a very large issue in your mind. I think that runs contrary to a lot of people who have been pushing for healthcare reform. We hear from demonstrators and activists that one of their demands is that commercial insurers stop denying necessary care. Is this a misnomer?
Well, I think it's an exaggerated fear. And a lot of that is based on people not trusting insurance industry, including insurance industry people like me. They don't instinctively trust that we're actually trying to administer their benefits correctly and to make sure that they get what they're due. In fact, most of us are trying to administer their benefits correctly. When President Obama says that nothing in Medicare will be taken away that's good for your health, he's really saying a mouthful, because what he's saying is that it is the things that cost a lot of money but don't really help people's health very much that are the things that might be restricted or changed so that there is more money available to take care of things that really do help people.
You've said in some of our conversations privately that one of the problems is that insurers are approving too many things, almost blanket approval for too many procedures. Can you talk about that?
Well, insurers don't consciously approve a terribly large amount of procedures that aren't appropriate or necessary, but we pay for a tremendous number of things that it's just impractical to review. And we know that some of them really aren't being done when they're the most helpful to people's health. But if you can't spend more than it costs, you know, for the claims in order to find the things that you shouldn't be paying for, and that's true for an awful lot of what health insurance pays for. So if people and their doctors don't make the best decisions, many of those things nonetheless are going to get paid, and they're going to add to the problem of healthcare costs.
So then going back to your other point that you made before this, that the problem, part of the problem is that we are creating plans with very high deductibles and that issue and that more out-of-pocket costs. Can you speak to that? And that is something we're definitely seeing. For those of us who have individual plans, we're really seeing that in the marketplace right now. What's the problem with that?
Very much so. Well, first I'd like to speak to the source of that. For around 40 years, there's been an increasing effort to find ways to reduce healthcare costs that really aren't appropriate, that aren't helping people's health. And that started with Medicare and Medicaid, which were begun back in the late 1960s. Those two programs brought billions of dollars into healthcare that weren't there before. And so they introduced a profit motive that really didn't exist to the same degree up until then. And human healthcare providers and drug companies and device makers are human, and many of them would like to make more money. And basically, since Medicare and Medicaid came into existence for now some, 45 years almost, we've been struggling to figure out how not to pay for things or not to pay too much for things that we shouldn't. That battle has been mostly lost. The only time that there really was an effective curb on healthcare spending for a few years was at the peak of the HMO products in the early 1990s. For several years, we actually did level off our healthcare costs. The problem was that there was a tremendous backlash. Partly because some insurance companies did it very badly and did deny things that people needed and should have been covered. And it doesn't take much of that to make a bad reputation. partly because, and this is a lot of it also, because there were people whose ox was being gored. People who were selling services in healthcare who weren't making as much money didn't like it and were feeding the fire of consumers' backlash against it for reasons that weren't very good reasons. But regardless of all of that, by and large, HMO benefits in the commercial insurance world were largely crippled in the late 1990s. And so the new solution, as of 6 or 8 years ago, was to bring these high deductible plans and high percentage of co-insurance plans. You know, for example, once you've met your deductible, then you're going to have to pay 20% of your costs or even 30% of your costs sometimes for the next $10,000 you spend or your insurance company spends. And those were brought in as though they were a new idea. They really weren't a new idea. The only thing new about them was the idea of having things like healthcare savings accounts that an employer could contribute to. It did not solve the problem for people who are sick, who can't save that money from year to year and because they're using their benefits every year. So those people basically now have the same barrier to care that they always had in a high deductible policy, and many of them don't get the care that they need. And so the reason they came into existence was that everything else was failing, not because they're a great idea. And the effect of them is just what you would expect. Some people aren't able to get the care they need. Not everyone has $2,000 to spare every year to take care of their chronic illness.
For those just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're speaking with Dr. Don Thiemann. He's a former medical director for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Before that, he was a doctor for 16 years. Dr. Thiemann, you mentioned the profit motive in healthcare, and this clearly is one of the things that's driving costs. We have in our country different areas where in similar locations where there's very different utilization of services and medical practice is very different. Can you talk about that situation and why that is and why health insurers can't do something about it?
Yes. Since the Medicare program came into existence over 40 years ago, we've had data about the cost of different kinds of medical procedures and how often they get done in different parts of the country, literally county by county all across the United States. And a few decades ago, a doctor named John Wenberg on the East Coast began to analyze that data. And his reports, because he's at Dartmouth, are named for the Dartmouth facility and called the Dartmouth Atlas. What he found is that there are differences in how much gets done of different kinds of surgery and other kinds of medical procedures that have nothing to do with how sick people are in a given county or any identifiable real need that would explain why they are so different. Sometimes three or four-fold differences in how many times or how often people get heart operations or back surgery or surgery for their old man's prostate problem. And that is a huge reason for much of the cost that we see that's probably not helping people's health very much. If we do back surgery on people who aren't that likely to do any better and have a good risk of being worse afterwards, or prostate surgery on people who have mild prostate problems and could be managed a different way, or surgery for prostate cancer for cancers that likely never would have caused a person trouble before he died of something else, which is quite common for prostate cancer. We're not helping people's health, but we spend tens of thousands of dollars on each procedure in many cases.
And also there is the point that we've created a system that's really good at saving lives and doing miraculous things kind of late in the game, but we are not good at preventing or controlling chronic diseases through primary care. You yourself was a primary care doctor, is that right?
I'm a family doctor, that's right.
Can you talk about some of the challenges for that profession and as a society, our challenge in trying to have doctors?
Sure. First, as you started to say, the cost of the high-tech care is enormous. And when people say we have the best healthcare system in the world, really the only way that they're right is when it has to do with that very high-tech care. Sometimes we call it cutting edge, and sometimes, because it could do more harm than good, we call it bleeding edge. That's great in the United States. Among the ill effects of it is that it sucks away resources from other kinds of medical care that actually would help a lot more people. One of those is a better system of primary care with more primary care doctors and nurse practitioners and physician assistants, and a better system for them to work in that has more resources so they can do their job better.
You know, one of the things that's obviously been a scare tactic throughout most of this year we're talking about healthcare is that there's going to be rationing, and you know, I heard of this death panels this summer. You now work as a medical director for Care Oregon, which is the largest administrator of the Oregon Health Plan, Oregon's version of Medicaid. And wanted to ask you, you know, about the so-called rationing that the Oregon Health Plan does to control costs. John Kitzhaber calls it rational versus rationing. He, of course, has been a lightning rod for some of the things that happened while he was governor that sort of highlighted that issue. Can you talk about how the Oregon Health Plan handles life-saving treatments and how that relates to the perception of government-controlled health care?
Yes, and help me with follow-ups here because this is a pretty complex answer. The basic idea of the Oregon Health Plan is to make a list of priorities for what will be paid for depending on how much money is available. So how much gets paid for is determined by the legislature based on revenue and budget priorities. But the determination of then what gets paid for is made by this thing called the prioritized list. And when the legislature sets the budget, it basically draws a line across that prioritized list that determines that things below that line aren't going to be covered for that budget period. Now, that list is created by doctors and other healthcare professionals looking at a whole variety of medical diagnoses and treatments for them and analyzing what treatments actually do the most good and also what treatments cost. In other words, are we spending $20,000 for $100 worth of value to people's health?
And that has led to some very critical lines of demarcation when it comes to covered services and treatments.
It sure has.
For
yes.
People. Why is that not an example of government rationing healthcare in a way that's detrimental to people who are in need of life-saving treatment?
It's only detrimental if you ignore the people who are able to have insurance and access to care because of that rational rationing, as John Kitzhaber says, and you only think about what the people who have coverage can't get. From the point of view of somebody who's lucky enough to have coverage, sure, it would be lots better if you could have your hernia operated on even though it's not causing complications just because it hurts and makes it harder to work. I don't like that particular thing myself. On the other hand, because some very expensive things that aren't very effective aren't covered, some additional thousands of people are able to have insurance and get their basic needs met. That's the trade.
Again, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're speaking with Dr. Don Thiemann. He is a medical director for Care Oregon and a former medical director for Regents. Going back to this issue of basically rationing or controlling costs, Do you think this is a solution, what you're describing, the way the Oregon Health Plan works? Do you think that's a solution that will work nationally, or is it going to be more nuanced?
I believe it will be more difficult than just trying to institute the Oregon Health Plan design nationally. It is politically controversial, as you've already said, and the likelihood that something of its type could be, for example, supported by the U.S. Senate seems unlikely. So I believe that won't be the answer, although it is being discussed in some form.
Let's get back to our current situation right now, especially in Oregon, in the healthcare marketplace. Health insurers have taken a lot of heat this summer as being a primary culprit in the rising costs of health insurance. Most of our insurers in Oregon are nonprofit. They're 501c3s, and they like to say that they don't make a profit, or that the profit is intended for the members, not for stockholders who they don't have. Can you talk about what it means to be a nonprofit insurer? You worked for one for many years. What makes it different from a corporate for-profit health insurance company?
Yes. Actually, except for a year or so with PacifiCare, I've only worked for nonprofit insurers in my career. So if you're a taxable nonprofit, you have to have a board that is a majority of community board members as opposed to inside industry board members. That's probably the most important distinction that makes the legal difference from a standpoint of the Internal Revenue Service and regulators. As far as the level of profit, it can vary. Typically, nonprofits only want to have a profit margin or a net margin of a few percent, whereas a for-profit insurer might take 10 or 15% or more if they can get it.
But there's more to it than that. I mean, if they have a 1% profit, they're also, that's not including salaries, marketing budget, overhead, office space, and that sort of thing. Is there a big difference in terms of that when you look at regions, for example, in the higher offices?
Well, it does vary, and I can't speak to companies other than regions very well with respect to that. For a company like Regions, among the biggest overhead items that contribute to cost and don't do anything for people's health are the marketing costs, and that includes a couple of things. There are internal marketing costs, the staff and the advertising and so forth. In Oregon, there are significant external costs because most insurance in Oregon goes through brokers and agents if it's a policy that's not self-insured by an employer. And those are substantial. That can be 6 or 8% of the premium dollar easily.
Talk, if you would, about Regions, who is the largest insurer in the state, has close to 1 million members, which has a lot of buying power to control things. Talk about their style and what may be harming the rest of us as a community because of it.
Well, I don't think I would say that their style is doing any harm to the community. Actually, I think it would be more helpful to your listeners to know just how big a company has to be to actually have much influence on prices. Some examples. Over the last 10 or 15 years, as insurance companies have gotten bigger, doctors and hospitals have gotten bigger too. They have not wanted to be dominated in local markets by a Regents or a United Healthcare or even a Providence, and so they've grouped up. Larger medical groups have formed. So, for example, in many communities, most or all of the orthopedic surgeons might be in one group. We have in Portland basically three large hospital systems that dominate the market. And so competition for price is not all that effective. Insurers can't really go out and play different providers off against each other as they could 15 or 20 years ago. So that has made it difficult to control price. And then another example is the issue of pharmacy. Regents has done a lot of work to try to control drug costs. And I can tell you that that work got a lot more effective when the pharmacy benefit function was unified across all four states, so that there were literally some 4 million members at one time, or almost 4 million members. That was enough lives to begin to have influence with the drug companies that really did have some influence on the cost and the premiums for drug coverage. But before that, when you're only talking what sounds like a lot of people, but I'll say a measly 1 million members in Oregon, there was a lot less ability to get pricing from the drug industry. So it's really a huge market out there with some very big players making money, and it's not that easy to control it.
And I can hear a lot of our listeners saying right now that a single payer would be the answer to that, ultimately controlling the market completely. Can you share with us just in general, do you have any hope for what Congress is putting together right now that it can solve our rising costs of healthcare?
I do have hope that we'll get a law this year that will make a significant step in the direction of a lot more people having access to care and the cost beginning to be controlled. We will not get anywhere near all the way there in this bill, but I am somewhat optimistic we'll get a very useful law that will help us make progress.
I also wanted to just close by asking you, as an insider to this industry, it's not often that journalists like me and listeners get to hear from people like you. Can you talk about your motivation for coming and speaking to us today?
Well, the opinions or the views I'm expressing aren't new, and I've expressed them before. The thing that caused me to write my first article for the Lund Report that you referred to was the feeling that if people like me don't speak up and allow folks to see a little bit of what's inside the healthcare industry, then we're not really doing what we should do as a citizen. People may recall I quoted Wendell Potter from his Bill Moyers interview when he quoted Dante, who said that there's the hottest places in hell are reserved for people who in a moral crisis maintain neutrality. And that actually struck me when I heard that on Bill Moyers' show, and it struck me that I, as Wendell Potter did, stand up and be counted, that I needed to do the same.
Well, thank you, Dr. Thiemann, for coming and sharing your story with us. And again, we're speaking with Dr. Don Thiemann. He is a former medical director for Regents and a current medical director for Care Oregon. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.